Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, October 5th, 2021. A former senior South Sudanese government official is gunned down in Jonglei State.
What happened was that a group of armed people attacked the home of the former commissioner of Defang Koruai. They shot and killed him on the spot.
And a South Sudanese lawmaker warns journalists not to report on how much members of parliament are paid at the National Legislative Assembly.
I was telling them, look, I'm not warning you, but I'm rather cautioning you to ensure that if you want anything to do with the emolument of the members of parliament, please contact the relevant offices on the relevant departments.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Jonglei State authorities say at least four people, including a former county commissioner, were killed over the weekend. Officials from PG County say a group of armed men shot and killed the former commissioner of Kwaruai County at his home on Saturday night. The officials say security forces are still pursuing the suspects. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
PG County Commissioner Nyong Malual Mayi claims the killers of Simon Gadwich Gadang, the former Koruai County Commissioner, are suspected of being from a clan on the outskirts of Canal Town.
What happened was that a group of armed people attacked the home of the former commissioner of Defang Koruai. They shot and killed him on the spot. They are a group of Amen from the root community who believe a murder case against the clanman was unfairly judged during the commissioner time. That is why they killed him.
County Commissioner Mayik says during his time in office, Gadang instituted a court that tried a man from root community and found him guilty of murder. He says the convicted man's clan men became angry with Gadang after evidence later emerged showing he did not kill anyone. Mayik says the root community clansmen demanded a cattle returned, which they paid as compensation, but that did not happen. Security forces, including the police, pursued the alleged attackers and killed three of them, according to Mayik.
Those who were fighting have run away and they are being searched at the moment. Two people among them were killed, and another who was captured later succumbed to the gunshot. These people are armed and not easy to arrest them easily. But the security forces went after them. The chief reported himself to the authority and is now with us. We look for the suspect.
The commissioner says tensions are still high in the area and authorities are trying their best to calm the situation. Major General Joseph Mayana Kon, the Jonglei State Police Commissioner, says he is aware of the incident in PG County and alerted police forces to keep law and order in the area.
I'm told by one of our officers who is in charge of police there in PG. So he told me yesterday that the former commissioner is killed. And then the forces who followed the criminal, two criminals were killed.
General Akon stresses that logistical challenges and barriers of mobility makes it difficult for police to respond quickly to protect citizens and their property. Simon Hoth, the Jonglei State Minister for Local Government and Law Enforcement, condemns the incident and says he too ordered security forces to apprehend the suspects.
The people run after those guys. Up to now, they do not come back to me. But I say to the commissioner, okay, that person has to be bring into the custody, has to bring into law, one who killed the person. He said, okay, and then now some people are now running after them. later maybe they have to give me the feedback.
Hoth is urging the local communities not to take the law into their own hands, even when they feel aggrieved by members of other communities. He says people should always allow authorities to do their work and follow legal procedures to resolve their differences in their quest for justice. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng, reporting from Bor.
From Bor, we move to Juba, where the chairperson designate of the Information Committee at the South Sudan's revitalized National Legislative Assembly has warned media houses against reporting on cash transactions by lawmakers without authorization from the Speaker of the Parliament. The head of the Association for Media Development in South Sudan says journalists have every right to report on unclassified information from the Parliament. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
MP Paul Yuani Bonjo spoke to the media last week to advise media houses on how they should report on the financial transactions of lawmakers serving in Parliament.
I was telling them, look, I'm not warning you, but I'm rather cautioning you to ensure that if you want anything to do with the emoluments of the members of Parliament, please contact the relevant offices, contact the relevant departments, or contact the relevant personality, the representative in the office of the clerk and the right honorable speaker in charge of finance in admin.
Bonjo says he called the news conference to provide context under which journalists, including new reporters, can understand the procedures of media reporting on matters that have to do with the Parliament.
Some of them are new in the field, and I need to bring them on board by trying to tell them the right procedures if they deal with the Parliament. Because the Parliament is a body that enacts laws. If you are coming to engage with such a body, you must also be confident of how to go about it.
Media houses that insist on exposing the financial transactions of members of Parliament without permission from the Speaker or Deputy Speaker of the Assembly will face lawsuits and their operating license could be withdrawn, according to Bonjo.
In some instances back, some of the media, instead of coming to me or going to the office of the clerk, sometimes they contact either the staff or they get the information that they get from sources that are not authorized to release such an information. And this one has happened when the so-called 40,000 even SA car loan was given.
Bonjo's warning has elicited wide condemnations from media rights groups who say it is just another attempt by members of Parliament to conceal information from the public. Michael Doko Agri, Executive Director of the Association for Media Development in South Sudan, says the MP has no right to stop the media from reporting on unclassified material which is in the public interest.
The media is regulated by law. And when it comes to information, information are categorized. There are classified information and unclassified information. So long as this falls under unclassified information, the public has the right to know. Unless if the Honorable is saying this is classified. Unclassified information is for the public. Therefore, it is not a hidden information.
The reconstituted South Sudan National Legislature was inaugurated in August this year by President Salva Kiir under the leadership of Gemma Nkumba as Speaker of the House. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Some teachers in South Sudan say they have been affected by COVID-19-related lockdowns. A teacher and a director of Juba-based private school says when the pandemic broke out and schools were closed, they earned no income, making it very hard for teachers to feed their families. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
Levi Simbalasu, the headmaster at the government-owned Sadaka Secondary School, says when the government opened schools in 2021 and announced COVID-19 restrictions, schools like his failed to abide by the rules because they did not have the necessary equipment, which he says put teachers' lives at risk.
We are vulnerable to the COVID-19 because at any time we can be attacked by the COVID-19 due to the number of the students in the classes. And the government did not provide us with any sanitary things or even vaccination for the teachers. One day they gave us a timetable that they're going to vaccine all the teachers, but unfortunately also the council need to say that the vaccine is not available. Let us wait. If the new vaccine being brought, then they will try to vaccine us. But now what we are hearing that the second vaccine arrived into the country, but they did not schedule us in their timetable of vaccine. We teachers are now worried about it.
Lasso says low salaries and delayed payments have been the biggest challenges for teachers in South Sudan, something that forced many teachers to quit. He says the government promised to keep paying teachers incentives every month during the pandemic, but that promise was short-lived.
Previously, the government provided us that we have a COVID-19 incentives. And this COVID-19 incentives, we receive it only for 2 months, which is since 2019, we did not get any incentive of COVID-19. Until now, we are still waiting and we are just carrying out our duties without even raising any complaint because we don't know where to raise the complaint.
Makwei Ruot Kang, a lecturer and director at the Juba-based Central Vocational Institute, says the pandemic caused the school to lose a number of students and lecturers, something that has affected the school's business operations.
During the coronavirus, the school was closed for almost 1 year. That was actually affecting the minimum of the school as well as possible. Even also the teachers, they went home, no teaching and also no salary for them. So when the government actually lifted the issue of coronavirus, we came and opened. It opened this year. So now still now we are facing those challenges. Many of our students, they went home during the coronavirus, during the lockdown, I mean. So now many of them even did not return back to school. We have been many lecturers, by the way. So during the coronavirus or the lockdown, some of them went back to their home and nobody returned back to come and teach.
George Kenye, the headmaster at Juba Day Secondary School, says teaching in South Sudan is not easy because salaries are often paid after 3 months. He says the last paycheck he received was for the month of June. He says it's been extremely difficult to feed his family this past 5 months. Kenya says many of his colleagues are forced to earn outside income, taking up teaching jobs in more than one school, but they could not even do that when schools were closed.
When this COVID-19 came in, it really brought the whole country down, and especially we, the teachers. First of all, a teacher earns from teaching. So when schools were closed, it means an income-generating activity for a teacher stopped. Therefore, life for a teacher for the whole of the last year, 2020 up to 2021, really most of the teachers suffered. Most of them had to go for other petty jobs just to sustain life.
Kenyi is calling on the government to ensure that teachers across the country are provided with a conducive working environment as it used to be decades ago.
Care for teachers like during the colonial time when they used to have housing. All teachers must deserve to stay in teachers' quarters. All teachers' quarters here have been taken away by other people who have no link with education. Number two, schools, so they need transport allowance, which must always be addressed based on the day-to-day condition. Without this one, then always you will find that the performance will not be up to date. Number three, the salary of the teacher must be improved more better than any other profession.
When South Sudan in Focus contacted Kuyok Abol Kuyok, Undersecretary for the Ministry of Education, he said he could not talk at the moment. This year's World Teachers' Day is being commemorated under the theme Teachers at the Heart of Education Recovery. According to UNESCO, this year's theme is to recognize the tireless efforts of teachers who kept on teaching even during hardships like the coronavirus pandemic. Kenya encourages fellow teachers to remain patient and continue teaching so they can help eradicate ignorance and illiteracy across the country. But he also hopes that their students will one day recognize teachers for their efforts and realize that it is teachers who are molding the next generation of South Sudanese leaders. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sereno in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, Nigerian resident doctors return to work. Find out why after this break.
do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who do you listen to in difficult times and why?
Mostly I listen to my wife and my dad, because these two people, they know me better than anybody.
I listen most to my mom because she's been through a lot. She has a lot of experiences. Anytime I tell her something, she kind of has a solution to the problem.
The person to listen to in difficult times: one, your parents. Two, if you're married, then it should be your partner, because your partner is the person who is there with you every time.
In difficult times, I most of the time listen to my fiancé. When I speak to him, he gives me good advice that helps to calm me down.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and the Africa Center for Disease Control say there are no drugs approved to fight COVID-19. If you have tested positive, talk to a doctor before taking any medicines. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. And in our Tuesday Health segment, we look at how medical personnel around the world are working during the COVID-19 pandemic. In Nigeria, the National Association of Resident Doctors say its members will resume work on Wednesday. The Doctors Association says the decision to suspend the strike comes after the government's recent encouraging stand during negotiations. Dr. Dare Godia Isaiah is the president of the National Association of Resident Doctors in Nigeria.
We realized that there's a change in the positions, and the government was willing to return back to negotiating table with us and to continue engagement. And we saw some commitment that the government exhibited after our discussion to start or recommence payment of the medical residency training fund to some of our members which have received. So I haven't seen those goodwill that the government was extending to the new executive. We decided that we call for an emergency National Executive Council meeting, and which we did. And the National Emergency Council meeting looked at the recent posture of the government and felt that on compassionate ground to the masses of the country who have not benefited from our services for the past 2 months, we decided that we suspended the strike for 6 months to monitor development from the government side. If they continue with the implementation as they have started, then continue with our work.
The decision to embark on strike came under a lot of criticism, especially at the time of this global coronavirus pandemic. Some even accused your members of being insensitive. For now, what is the step forward?
Well, you know, as I said earlier, we didn't wake up one day and just decided that we were embarking on strike. The decision was taken after several ultimata and several engagements with the government. And also, if you may recall, in February, we went on strike and signed a memorandum of action with the federal government. But they reneged on that memorandum of action. So I can say that even though I am not into blame game, but the decision, or rather the prolongation of this strike, is not entirely the fault of ours or our members.
How much time, or what is the period or time frame do you anticipate the government to resolve the concerns for which you embarked on this strike?
Well, we don't expect that it will be done in a day. It's, but we will continue to monitor the body language and the progress in the implementation of those issues that methods to go on strike. And if we see a good commitment and the willingness of the government to implement those positions, we meet in 6 weeks and take appropriate decision as to the way forward.
That's Dr. Dare Godaya Isaiah, president of the National Association of Resident Doctors in Nigeria. He was speaking to my colleague, Peter Clody. Sudanese officials say security forces have killed four suspected Islamic State group militants in raids on their hideouts in the capital Khartoum. A military officer was also killed and three others wounded. Four suspected militants were arrested. Monday's raid took place in the same Jebra neighborhood in southern Khartoum, where five intelligence officers were killed last week in a shootout with the suspected militants. From Sudan, we move to Kenya, where Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta is among world leaders named in a leaked document dubbed the Pandora Papers as hiding secret family wealth overseas. The papers, compiled by scores of investigative journalists, show the Kenyattas hid tens of thousands of millions of dollars in offshore and shell companies, even as he urged officials to declare their own wealth. The revelation of hidden assets, while not necessarily illegal, has called into question the sincerity of the Kenyan president's calls for transparency in the fight against corruption. For VOA News, Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
The Kenyatta family was one of the hundreds of companies and families around the world reported to be holding large sums of wealth outside their home country. According to the report from the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, the ICIJ, President Uhuru Kenyatta and his family have accumulated more than $30 million in wealth, including a property in London. The president and six members of his family were linked to at least a dozen offshore companies. The law in Kenya prohibits any public state officer from holding or running a bank account outside the jurisdiction of Kenya without the blessings of the Ethics and Anti-Corruption Agency. Constitutional lawyer Bob Mukangi says it will be difficult to know whether the Kenyattas have declared their wealth, since such information is not shared with the public.
The Public Officers Ethics Act, which demands that public officers, state officers, declare their wealth, not only elected officers, but also appointed officers, that they must declare their wealth. And this is done annually or at election time and must be updated. The only challenge with this provision is that the wealth declaration is not made public. So, yes, the different personalities, gaining entry to appointive or elective office in Kenya do make the declarations, but it is difficult to track and trace.
The ICIJ uncovered 11.9 million files from companies that created offshore accounts. It is said wealthy corporations, business people and politicians like to use Panamanian foundations to hide money because they don't have to reveal their identities to the government there. According to the International Monetary Fund, tax havens such as this cost governments between $400 and $800 billion every year in lost tax revenue from companies and individuals. The loss of the revenue makes it harder for government to provide citizens with basic services like running water, electricity, health and education. Wanjeri Nderu is a social justice activist based in Nairobi. She has planned dozens of protests in Kenya about the misuse of public funds. She says the citizens are experiencing economic hardship due to such vices.
We as Kenyans are being overtaxed already because of the kind of theft we are experiencing. We are finding that the president and his cronies have sat down and come up with measures to even tax us further. We have seen the highest price of fuel in this country is what we have right now. People are not affording basic things. And then you sit down and go through the Pandora Papers expose and you realize that the same people who are stealing from us cannot even trust their own systems with the loot.
According to a Kenya newspaper report Monday, Kenyatta said the Pandora Papers will lift the veil of secrecy for those who cannot explain their wealth. He said he will respond fully to the report when he returns from Ethiopia, where he's attending Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's inauguration. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Let us know what you think about this show. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now leave you with some actually traditional song. Listening to some Acholi traditional song from the heart of the Acholi land. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.